saving money on your kitchen projects at Menards. We carry everything you need to turn your kitchen dreams into reality. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, get 15% off everything you can fit in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Milo's Pro Rewards members, go big during Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. Buy more and save more with up to 20% off job site essentials like primed finger joint boards when you spend $3,000 or more. Plus, get up to 25% off PVC DWV pipes when you spend $250 or more. Shop Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 123. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Irreplaceable Truths. I'm Dr. G. We have a very special episode today. It's going to be a veterinarian who really is concerned about the profession, loves the profession, and is very concerned about early career veterinarians. And I'm sitting here with a veterinary student from Western University. I'll let him introduce himself.
Thanks, Dr. G. I really appreciate that. And you know, real quick, I want to just preface and say that how appreciative I am for, you know, the path that you've chosen and your ability to go back and recognize that there is issues and that you're wanting to address them because of the pitfalls that you may have experienced. So I really appreciate you wanting to help us out. And I'm excited to get people interested in wanting to find their mentors and to really ask those questions to the people that have been there before us, because we don't know what the hell we're doing, and that's okay. So I'm Garth Robillard. I am a third-year veterinary student, and I run a little podcast called Veterinary Vibes. And the motto is, we vibe so you can thrive. And that's what we should be doing in veterinary medicine, is we should be thriving. So I'm looking forward to this conversation and kind of just getting the word out.
Well, the first thing I'm going to tell you, Garth, is no one likes an ass-kisser, but thank you for those kind words. And also, it's not just vibe and thrive. We need to become cheerleaders again for the profession. We have totally lost that whole, man, it is so cool to be a veterinarian. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a different time. It was unbelievable. It wasn't a job. It was a passion. It was something that you would go in every day, not knowing what you're going to see, not knowing what you're going to do. It was very emotionally trying. It was very hard as far as, you know, just physically by the end of the day, because you're on your feet all day. But you never, ever were looking at the clock going, when am I going to leave?
Yeah.
And I feel as if that's gone. So that's just my little 2 cents right there.
Why is it gone? I mean, that's the biggest thing for me. I question that because I haven't been in the field at all. I'm in my bubble still, right?
Right.
And my bubble is the perception of what other people have experienced and the feedback that they give me about where I'm going to go or what I'm going to do. And I hear that quite often on my podcast about, you know, I experienced this issue, nothing was solved, and they bitch and moan about it and they don't do anything about it. So why has it shifted from a profession of pain and distrust? And I mean, the way the public views veterinarians and veterinary professionals, why has that changed so much in your lifespan?
Well, the thing is, the ones who get the most press are the people who go on social media and talk about what a ripoff a veterinarian is. Mm-hmm. But if you looked at the latest poll from U.S. News and World Report, 87% polled believe nurses were the most trustworthy. The word, you know, second was veterinarians, sitting at 75%. Mm-hmm. So no, the public is not afraid of us. But again, that doesn't sell, right? What sells? People talking about, oh, my veterinarian ripped me off. My veterinarian did this. My veterinarian did that. Now, getting to your original question, where's the cheerleading? Where is the happiness gone? That is a very hard question, because you can ask yourself, is it generational? Which it could be, because Gen Xers are different than millennials that are different from Gen Zers. Is it because, I mean, my argument I'm making that because of social media, I think a lot of the younger generations have lost their emotional intelligence. They cannot read a room. They don't know how to look someone in the eye and talk to them. They don't know how to handle their own emotions. They don't know how to handle someone else's emotions. And that is the worst, because if you look at what the number one veterinary stressor there is, it's client incivility. Well, dealing with clients, yeah, every fur baby comes in with a two-legged owner, and you got to learn to play that game. The second you learn to play that game is the second you will really start to appreciate the profession. It took me a while. I'm very extroverted. I love talking to people. Mm-hmm. That's why I think you and I have a podcast, yeah. Right? But we're a different breed. So let me ask you this question then. The people that are telling you how horrible or the difficulties, not horrible, difficulties of the profession, how long have they been out?
How long have they been out of practice?
No, been out of school.
Been out of school? Ooh, yeah. I mean, that's an important correlation to draw there. I feel like the ones that have given me the most negative advice about the profession have been in the longest, actually. I think veterinary medicine is in a rebirth phase. And again, this is completely different upon the path that they took. If you asked a shelter veterinarian, an exotic veterinarian, and an equine veterinarian what they thought of the profession, you're going to get three different ideologies about the profession. And those all may be true, or they all may just be a subjective perception of what they've experienced. I mean, going down the equine path, how many people do you know in your life that are veterinarians that say, I started as an equine veterinarian and I just couldn't do it. I had to switch to smallies. I had to do something different. So my question is, instead of why are we focusing on all these negative aspects, complaining about them, and then not setting up some change? And that's why I want the veterinary medicine to be in its rebirth, because there needs to be change. We've experienced this.
The one thing you're going to learn really quick is that veterinarians fear change. Mm-hmm. They hate change. Like going from dipping x-rays in the three different dips, or then going to the automatic processor, and then going to digital, that was huge. Going paperless and having a computer system, oh, no, can't do that. We've been doing this. We've been changing the way they do pain medication, right? I think my generation of veterinarians were the huge ones that pushed pain, not only post-operative pain, but pre-operative pain. But trying to get those to change, why would I change? I've been doing this for 30 years. I'm sorry, ACE and TORB will not get pain. Let me rip out your testicles. Mm-hmm. Or let me take out your ovaries, and then you tell me. I'll make sure I tell the nurse, hey, just give them a Valium and some Tylenol postoperatively. They'll be okay. Mm-hmm. Veterinarians hate change. And I think because of that, I think we have not kept up with everything. And because of us hating change, that's where private equity came in. They saw a very fragmented, system. Mm-hmm. And they're like, wow, we can take over all of this, set prices, and we'll be just fine. But I think private equity is learning the hard way. That's not how it works. You can't run veterinary medicine from an Excel spreadsheet. So when you talk into that, these older veterinarians are having trouble with the profession now, is because we saw it through the roaring, 2000s. Mm-hmm. It was incredible. And then, of course, then we got hit 2008. And then we just started getting out of it, and things started getting better. And then we got hit with COVID. And I think COVID really changed the profession, because being an entrepreneur, immediately I went to 2008 mode, mm-hmm. right? I'm like, okay, everybody, I'm going to try to keep everyone. We'll cut you down to 32 hours. We're going to keep your benefits. We'll do what we have to do. Veterinary medicine went through the roof. Mm-hmm. Everyone and their sister got an animal. Everyone was home all the time. So if an animal had the slightest like imperfection that morning, they were in. A lot of veterinarians closed because of COVID. I wish I would have, because I took out a PPP loan that was totally forgiven by the federal government because I used it to hire more people, pay my bills, you know, pay off loans, pay my rent, you know, do all the things you're supposed to do with it. But Gavin Newsom was like, hey, you didn't lose 25% in any quarter, so we're going to tax you on your, you know, your PPP loan. I got a California tax bill that year for like $287,000 at the end of the year. So basically, they took my entire PPP loan and I had to pay them. So, you know, it really changed a lot of things in the way we did. The happiest veterinarians I've ever been was when we were curbside.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have to deal with clients. And yeah. If we did, it was very minimal or over the phone. So I don't know. Have people changed?
I think people have changed. I think people have changed greatly. But I think we needed the great awakening of COVID to bring out that change and be a leading light to say, hey, you know, you just told me that. You said veterinarians are not quick to change. Well, if we keep saying that and we keep allowing that to happen, they're never going to change. So that's why you get these companies. I know a lot of great veterinary consultants that go in and say, if you're going to hire me, we're going to make some changes, right? This is what we need to do, or this is an area that you can improve on. Obviously, the veterinarian is going to be the end-all be-all at the end of the day. Who's signing the checks is going to be the one doing it. But if they want to have any sort of growth or change in their mindsets, in their ways, I mean, then we would still be, you know, I mean, a lot of people like still give small animals xylazine. Like, why? That's a big debate right now on social media. Like, why are we giving the small animals that? But I still know some veterinarians that do that in their protocol.
But you know what xylazine's used for now, right?
What's that?
That's the zombie overdose from fentanyl. They have found that
Yeah.
So they're chopping up xylazine, mm-hmm. mixing it in with fentanyl, and then whatever.
So they're trying to make it a control drug now?
Right. So that's why Narcan isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need yohimbine.
Right.
You got to reverse that.
Mm-hmm.
But no one ever asked veterinarians. Do you think the city of New York asked any shelter veterinarian, hey, what do you guys do when you have a corona outbreak or a parvo outbreak in a shelter? What do you do? No one asked me. I would have been, I give all the puppies that have it, I give them plasma. They have antibodies against those diseases. Could you imagine? And finally, someone brought that up about 3 months into the whole New York debacle. And they said, oh, we don't want to use plasma because it'll mess with their immune system and they'll probably get COVID again. I thought the whole point was to get people out of the hospital off respirators,
mm-hmm.
because once they were on the respirator, they died.
Yeah, they're coming off of it.
I mean, if you asked anybody, hey, we're going to give you some antibodies for corona or, you know, for coronavirus, do you think they would have taken it?
No, hell no.
It's crazy because now it's crazy because it scares me. Like COVID was panic medicine on the human side. It was complete panic. I've never in my life seen doctors, brilliant doctors. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. It's a virus, you know? Come on. How do you take care of viruses? Well, antibodies are one way to do it. Don't worry about it. Get them out of the hospital. Let's move on. But yeah, that's a whole we could do.
I know.
We could do 20 podcasts. Well, on that.
What I want to say on that is I think it's unfortunate that happened. And even the common people of the world, they saw these trends. They saw the public health officials come out and blatantly not know what to do. And, you know, it's understandable if they come out with transparency. But when they start hiding behind things, it just creates a complete distrust for efficacious things that we can test, that we know. Like you said, a virus is a virus. We know what we should be doing, right? And then this also translates to veterinary medicine, right? The One Health approach is such a joke to me right now, right? And I'm talking to veterinarians that are in very high political spheres within One Health. I think it needs to be pushed more. I think it needs better education. and we need to be utilized. Veterinarians are just as useful as your human healthcare practitioners. And we're going to see that. I mean, you've probably seen that in practice where people are worried about vaccine reactions in their pets. I mean, what do you think now the implications come from COVID are going to be for when I need to give the next rabies vaccination to a dog? What are they going to question now? Now that they've been ill-informed about vaccination and all that stuff. And like you said, we could go on and on about that. But I think it's ridiculous. It's saddening. It's disheartening. It's discouraging. But we got to roll with the punches, what we've been given. So,
well, the one thing that's beautiful about the profession is that you don't have to practice the same way and still get the same results, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a gold standard that the state of California tries to hold everyone to. But honestly, no one can afford the gold standard anymore. It's very hard. I mean, how many people do you know that can throw down $12,000 a leg?
Most veterinarians couldn't.
Exactly. The most veterinarians probably could not get a TPLO on their own dog, even with the veterinary discount. And, you know, that's very scary. But what's so interesting, what I want to get back to really quick, is I want to bring up a double standard.
Sure.
These brilliant MDs, the real doctors, because people will always ask you, why didn't you become a real doctor? Mm-hmm. Those MDs, they come out, oh, we don't know what to do. We don't know anything. And the people still are listening to them and trusting them. What happens to a veterinarian when if a client came into you and you're like, oh, I really don't know what's going on, you know? Don't go find another veterinarian, right? So there's a double standard there too. Like, it's okay for the MDs around the world to be like, oh, we have no idea. And everyone's like, oh, they have no idea. Oh my God. But if a veterinarian ever said that, they'd probably say, oh, dude, that guy's a quack. I'm going down the street to the next one. They'll know. You know, and it's sad. It's sad that there's still that right there. And mm-hmm. I think early career vets really need to understand, if you talk to any MD, you're going to get utmost respect from them because they're like, geez, I only had to learn one species. You learned 8 or 9, you know? And they're like, gosh, I hear it's hard to get into vet school. I could never have gone into vet school because I couldn't do euthanasia. You know, that's the funny thing. MDs keep veterinarians at a very high regard. Mm-hmm. But the public does not. So I'm with you, and I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to put your head through a wall. I'll be behind you the whole way to change the profession. Mm-hmm. 100%. But to actually be able to change it, good luck. Veterinarians are a weird breed. Breed. We come from all aspects of the world, all different types of backgrounds, all different beliefs of what an animal truly is to a family. And it's very interesting. I hope, I pray that, you know, they all believe above all, do no harm. That's the one thing we all have in common. I hope.
Right.
But there's some out there that are just like, no, above all, I need to drive a Porsche.
Yeah.
But we didn't go to vet school to drive Porsches.
Yeah.
The fact that some of us got lucky right now, great. But you know, you don't drive a Porsche. You drive that Ford, you drive that minivan, right? You drive the soccer mom car.
Yeah.
But you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I disagree. I don't think it is what it is. It's like a good approach, because if that's just putting us back in the same vicious circle that we've been in. Right. And so you talk
about, we're still in that circle.
Right. Exactly.
Go ahead. Oh, no, you're trying to make it a straight line. You're trying to dissect that circle, mm-hmm. so it rolls out and it's a straight line. So we just keep going forward.
That's ideal, right? But history repeats itself, right? And everything that's ever happened, we know it's repeated itself. But if you have the right tools, you can redirect it, right? And so I think with veterinarians, I like to utilize an approach that, for example, I learned from serving tables, and it's the chameleon effect. And I will say this till the end of time. I do not think opposites attract. Whoever said that is full of shit. Like likes like, and we see it across everything from religion to politics. Why is it no different? So the same thing when it comes to interacting. Like you said, you talked about dealing with different clients, dealing with veterinarians that are very peculiar. They're very odd with certain things that they do. And I think being able to fit in with them and try to understand them and then kind of nudge them in the right direction. I think that's the way to go. At least that's the way that I've been approaching exam rooms, because I'm testing myself. Right now, I have the ability to test the way I go into an exam room, really, and have minimal to no repercussions, because it's not my company. I'm not invested in it. As long as, like you said, I'm doing no harm and I'm doing things the right way, I can go in. And I learned this serving tables is, if I got a crying baby, I'm going to deal with that baby, right? I'm going to start juggling. And I'm not kidding you. I've taken lemons from the back and juggled for a couple that can enjoy a meal while they had a crying baby, right? And then at the next table over, I got to set the lemons down, and they're all businessmen that are discussing something. And I've got to rifle off the types of varietals in the grapes, in the wine, you know? And I got to say, hey, look, I think this would pair nicely with that. This comes from this region. But I mean, 2 feet away, I'm doing something completely, you know, different. So I think if we take that approach to veterinary professionals, we can make a lot of change. And I'm not, you know, I'm a realist. At the end of the day, I'm a realist. I understand there's going to be a lot of backlash, right? But at the same time, I'm trying to be as optimistic as I can.
Okay, so what you just did right there, that's emotional intelligence. You read the room. When you were serving, you read the room, right? Part of my dissertation is going off of, we're accepting students off of IQ, not EQ. And anyone who disagrees with me, I'll say, bring it on. Because I was nothing special out of undergrad. I had 5 years of veterinary experience before I got in. I knew what was coming up. But a lot of these, the top 10% of every vet class, I think they do not know how to talk to clients. I think they know how to study. I think they know how to study in undergrad. I think they knew how to study in high school. I think they know how to study through vet school. First thing I did when I got to vet school is I found two amazing men. One unfortunately passed away, James Morlock. He was unbelievable. My other buddy, he owns a spay-neuter clinic in Arizona. But we would go to anatomy lab with a case of beer and just sit there and drink and go through anatomy lab. We would go to football games every Saturday. We'd go out to bars on Thursday. My wife, who is amazing, we met at the interview. Her first year she was all study, 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 study. She was this introverted thing. And then she realized that C equals DVM. Right? The great equation. Mm-hmm. The veterinarian that graduates at the bottom of their class is still called what? A veterinarian, right? We knew we weren't going to go do internships, residencies. We knew we were just want to go out into general practice. She wanted to work with her dad, who owned a veterinary practice here in California. And all of a sudden she realized, holy shit, you're doing it right. I don't need to read 16 chapters of virology, right? I don't need to read a whole book on poultry medicine. So she got into that vibe. And all of a sudden, she started enjoying it more. You got to learn how to be able to get out there, have fun, be yourself, do things that really mean a lot. And that builds your emotional intelligence. Being social builds your emotional intelligence. These veterinarians nowadays that come out, I'm not saying they all don't have emotional intelligence, but a great majority do not. And they're the ones who are part of the 33% that say, I'm done being a veterinarian within the first 10 years. So the fact that you got that down, I can tell you right now, I can look you in your eye, and with about 98% accuracy, I'm going to say you're going to be very successful. Because you know what you're doing. You know the importance of knowing who's sitting across that exam table, right? You walk in there and you see a man that looks like he's on his phone, doesn't really care. You're going to learn that person more than likely just wants to get the bare minimum, wants the diarrhea to stop, and he's going to be out the door. But then you also have that lady, that older lady that comes in with her little chihuahua, mm-hmm. that more than likely is going to try to kill you. Let's put that out there, right? But you're going to know she's going to want to do everything in the world to save her companion. And you got to learn how to read that room. You know, TikTok's not going to teach you how to do that. Social media is not going to teach you how to do that. The only way you're going to learn how to do that is by putting yourself out there. Be prepared to get reamed. Be prepared to get horrible reviews online. But you got to learn that game. Mm-hmm. And if you don't take those chances, it's not going to happen.
Why do you think there's such an EQ mismatch or lack of EQ for graduating veterinarians, let's say, in today's space? Because it may have been different back, you know, when you graduated. I don't know what the limelight was. I mean,
it's still the same.
Right. The trends are still there. So I'm curious to know all of the experience, the wonderful experience you have. And I want to go back and say, I appreciate you saying that. I'm going to be successful. That means a lot to me. So thank you. But I'm quite fascinated with the lack of emotional intelligence in so many people in the vet space.
It's the soft skills, right? Not the hard skills.
Yeah.
You can teach anyone how to read lab work. You can teach anybody how to look at an x-ray. Shit, AI is going to read your x-ray for you. You're going to send it out for a radiology consult because it's so easy to do nowadays. You don't have to sit there with your imaginoscope and probably a joint and go, well, let me look at this, you know, 2D picture and try to figure out what's going on in a 3D body, right? So the thing is, they don't teach you the soft skills. Who's teaching you soft skills in veterinary school? Who's teaching you soft skills once you get out? Who's teaching you those soft skills? Communication with clients saves your ass from getting sued, saves your ass from going to the medical board, saves your ass from a lot of things. Being able to admit there was a mistake, being able to admit that you're heartbroken and disappointed in yourself, being able to admit those things is fine. But the problem is that when you accept kids with high IQ, you're looking for perfectionists. Perfectionists probably that never have been told they did a bad job. So the first time they nailed with that, I mean, that's like taking a toy away from a kid, right? They've never experienced that before. And then they go home and they ruminate over it because they can't handle their emotions. And actually, it's called preservative cognition, where you sit there and you worry about the rumination, and you also have the worry the next morning when you wake up. And if you're not able to control your emotions, have those soft skills, it's going to eat you alive, because you're going to go home, you're going to be exhausted. You're going to go home and not go do the things you should do, which is go out to eat with family, friends, go to church, go to synagogue, go work out, go for a walk on the beach, go meditate on a hill, whatever your thing is, because you're just going to be so drained from beating yourself up over something. And we're human. That's going to happen. But what school doesn't prepare kids for is those soft skills that are so very important to have in life. Mm-hmm. In life. You have a young daughter now. Congratulations, Mazel Tov on that.
Thank you.
But she might get into sport. You'll see it all the time in these coaches. Like, you'll see that they don't have this ability to understand that your daughter is going through a lot of hard times herself, trying to become a woman, trying to deal with friends, because girls are mean. They are mean. And trying to figure out if her outfit's okay, FOMO, you name it, right? Mm-hmm. What anything that girls that are going through junior high school are dealing with. And they play these mental fucking games on these girls. It's not surprising that there's so much freaking depression out there, because the emotional exhaustion is way more than mental or physical. And emotional exhaustion has become so prominent is that's the one thing that everyone looks at for burnout. And veterinary medicine is nothing but emotional labor, right? I've told this story, I think, on 4 podcasts so far. In one day, I had 5 euthanasias and 4 puppy exams. You want to talk about an emotional roller coaster? You know? But how is school preparing you for that? It's not. And I'm not trying to bag any schools, but there's some schools that are coming out now that are going to be online mostly. Oh, okay. So, and I don't know how their clinical year is supposed to go. I know how it goes at Western.
Mm-hmm.
It concerns the heck out of me that there is no set way, or, you know, set, you send your kids out to go do their rotations. How do you know what they're learning? Because I talked to some of your Western students. Some Western students are like, oh yeah, I wasn't even allowed to restrain the dog. I just had to stand there in the corner my entire time. How are you going to learn? I mean, at least when I mentored, and I'm lucky. I had amazing mentors before I went to vet school. When I graduated, Dr. John Hamill, I worked with him. Phenomenal mentor. Peter Weinstein and I got to know each other in 1996 when he came and talked at my alma mater. That's why I'm wearing my orange. Mm-hmm. And his alma mater, Illinois. And we hit it off immediately. I mean, so I've been very lucky. But whenever I mentor anyone, I don't care. Because I learned that students, when they come out of school, they're worried about, oh my God, what is this lab work? Oh, it has Cushing's. No, not every fucking dog has Cushing's. Mm-hmm. Let me make that clear to you. Prednisone is not a scary thing. You can use prednisone. Because a client, when they come in and they want the dog to stop itching, they don't want a Benadryl shot and some Apoquil. If it's really bad, don't be afraid to use some steroids, because a dog will stop itching in like an hour. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying do high doses of steroids for 6 months, but mm-hmm. that's what they're looking for. And that's what I always had to break into these students. That, yes, the way the White Pillar place does it is mm-hmm. incredible. But there's things that you need to learn on the general practice side that 90% of your clients don't want to do x-rays on the first visit, don't want to do lab work on the first visit, don't want anything but a quick fix, mm-hmm. right? And yes, a lot of clients, talking about this change, right? A lot of clients worried about vaccine. In 2002, I went to vaccine titers. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, you can't do vaccine titers. They're so bad. They're so wrong. I didn't have one single dog die of distemper or parvo going off vaccine titers. And to get clients to buy into the whole vaccine titer was, if the titer came back low, I will give you a dog a distemper parvo vaccine for free.
Look, I have the value.
Do you know how much a distemper parvo vaccine cost? One vaccine. To the clinic.
How much?
At 28 cents. I think they're a dollar now.
Yeah, they're a little bit higher now.
I'll bet a dollar. I mean, you gamble, right? Who won't put a dollar on to a dollar to win 75?
Yeah. I bet a dollar on the gas station. Who's going to leave next to go pull my car in there? Yeah, I actually got to take a piss so bad. I need to take a break, dude. I'm going to piss myself.
Go for it. Sorry. We're pausing.
Pausing.
Poor guy's got to pee.
I stand on the edge of my street with a knife held in my back.